Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ahí va a llegar el gol del Arsenal. Ozil marca. Mesut Ozil,
cerrado el cabezazo, gol del Arsenal, que el cabezazo picado y el estreno del brasileño Gabriel en su primer partido con el Arsenal.
This is Arscast Extra.
Hello and welcome to another Arscast Extra, as always with James from Gunnerblog. James, goodly morning to you.
Goodly morning to you too. How are you doing this morning?
I am all right. This is an extra Arscast Extra. We're going to try and fly through this in about an hour because we've got busy days ahead of us, both of us. But we want to address, of course, the magnificent penalty shootout win last night in the Carabao Cup. Arsenal beating Liverpool. It was one of those weird games, James, where I was looking at it going, I want to win. I always want to win, but I don't really care if we lose. And then you get to a penalty shootout and you're like, do them. Do it. Don't yeah. let them do it. And especially when James Milner, did his thing after scoring the first penalty.
Yeah, what was that about? Who was that to? Do we know?
I don't know. I mean, maybe Bernd Leno. Hey, fuck off. Get the fuck out of here. Sorry, there was literally a magpie outside my window.
Oh, shit.
Fucking Mourinho. Anyway.
Terrifying.
But maybe Bernd Leno? I mean, he was the only one who could possibly have been having a bit of mouth. He doesn't strike me as the type to go in for that kind of thing, does he, Leno?
No. He's quite a bit of a robot man.
Yeah, he's a bit dry. You're going to miss, and I will laugh.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I am always the number one, and I will always be the number one. I thought, he was obviously, one of the big stars of the evening. Maybe Arsenal's best player of the
Yeah, night. Sure. I like this from Gagan J on the Discord. He said, what is it about Liverpool captains raising their index fingers that angers the gods so much? McMahon, Milner, it never works
True.
Out well.
True.
Yeah,
true.
So there you go.
Should have remembered that.
Exactly. So look, it was, I suppose, an interesting game. There were a couple of aspects that were interesting about it, which we'll get into. Team selection, Bernd Leno starting. I'd sort of thought that maybe Alex Runison might get a start, but Mikel Arteta spoke afterwards about how, he arrived late and has had a bit of an issue, so that's why Leno is in goal. Good thing, too, I would say, considering how busy he was. I enjoyed your tweet about the save that Leno made from the header, where he sort of pushed it away and parried it across goal, and you asked, could he have caught it, or, was that good or was it bad?
Pushed it away. Yeah.
Minamino, I think, hit the crossbar afterwards. I enjoyed the complete lack of clarity that the replies provided.
It was quite amazing, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Like I said, I think he could have pushed that sort of away from goal. Is that harsh? And I think if it had been a poll, it would have been about 50-50. The Emmy camp and the Leno camp seem quite firmly established on social media.
I mean, is that something now that we have to put to bed? I kind of feel like it is.
Think that's fair. It's inevitable, isn't it, that you're going to do that? But it's sort of unfair to compare him to Emi Martinez, I think, who had such a brief run in the team and such a successful run in the team. It's kind of such a pristine memory that any comparison to that, I think, is going to be tough on Bernd.
It's kind of like, when a rock star dies young and they don't go on to make all the really shit albums that they make in their 40s and 50s, and they just have this incredible body of work that they produced in their 20s at the peak of their creativity.
I said exactly that in my video yesterday.
Oh, really? I haven't watched it, sorry.
It's like when someone dies really young and it's sort of like, they're a pristine, perfect, memorial forever. That will be Emi Martinez in our hearts, and every little thing that we see Bernd Leno do wrong, just because he's played a lot more games, he'll be judged more harshly accordingly. Look, we whatever way you slice it, Leno has been excellent since he arrived at Arsenal for the most part, and we have a very, very good goalkeeper.
Yeah.
And we were very grateful to him yesterday.
For sure. I mean, if we are going to carry on with this, does that not mean we all have to watch every Aston Villa game?
And then, are you not doing that and sort of weeping through your hands as you do?
It's just a bit strange.
That's what I'm doing.
Just watch every Aston Villa game. Well, Bernd Leno could have done better. You know, he would have done better with that one. You know, the two camps watching. Look at what Emmy has done.
Yeah,
look
at
what Bernd has done.
Someone had clipped up an Emi Martinez gaffe where he dropped the ball. And I think the goal was actually ruled offside. In the end, but he basically parried it straight out to a guy in front of him. So, you know, everyone's coming to this argument armed. I think, you know, Leno, I think we have to assess him on his own attributes, which is that he's a really good goalkeeper. It doesn't mean there aren't things that he could do better. But he had a fantastic game at Anfield.
The other thing as well, and I said this on the blog today, is that the decision to let Emi Martinez go, and Mikel Arteta said afterwards again, you know, we didn't want him to go, but, you know, circumstances were what they were. But that decision was made not just on what Emi Martinez did after the lockdown, which was great. You know, he's been at Arsenal for 11 years, 10, 11 years. They've seen this guy arrive as a kid, grow up, become a very good goalkeeper. You know, they have intimate knowledge, and I mean that in, you know, the purest possible way. They know everything about him, what he does on the pitch, what he does on the training ground, how he lives his life, all of those kind of things. Mikel Arteta is a former teammate of Emi Martinez. So they didn't make the decision to let him go simply based on what he did after lockdown, which was great. They did it with the full knowledge of everything that led up to that, the circumstances, the fact that perhaps there are no fans in the ground, and also the fact that Aston Villa offered us a shitload of money for a player who a few months previously would not have got anywhere near that kind of value. So, you know, I think we have to look at it through that context and try and find the wider context in why that decision was made. And as Leno, I thought the interview afterwards last night was quite funny, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Where he just, as you said, I am number one. I will always be number one. You know, there was no like, look, Emi did great. And, you know, it was fantastic to see Emi do so well. It was like, nah, I'm number one. I've always been number one. And now it's up to me to prove it. He didn't, you know, suggest that he's going to sit on his laurels. He literally said, my job is to prove that every week. And he did that last night.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think, you know, if Emi Martinez going is the sacrifice Arsenal had to make in order to further strengthen the squad, I think people will definitely make their peace with that if it happens.
If it happens. We have to do that whole strengthening the squad thing first, though, before we can have that soften the blow a little bit for the people who loved Emi. And look, you know, it's no slight on Emi Martinez or anything like it. But
just quick thing. Yeah. I mean, are you worried that maybe old Rune Runarsson isn't great and that might be part of the selection, or do you buy what Mikel said yesterday?
I suppose you have to take it a bit on face value. You know, he hadn't played, you know, like anyone else in France, hadn't played since March. So chances are he was maybe a bit less sharp than he needed to be. And I think if you are a second-choice goalkeeper, if you are moving to a club where, with all due respect to Dijon, the standards are higher and the expectations are higher and the pressure is higher, maybe you do need more than, you know, 2 weeks of training when you've been brought in towards the end of a transfer window to get yourself ready. So I will take it on face value from Mikel Arteta. I can't make any judgment on him as a player because I've literally never seen him play. And until such time as we do, or until such time as I do, and see him pull on an Arsenal shirt and perform, I'm not going to sit here and make any judgments on him as a player. But I do think it's pretty clear that there's a very established number one and a very established number two at Arsenal right now, in much the same way as there was before lockdown. So we're back to where we were.
That's true. That's true, except I think maybe the gulf is even bigger. I'm not even sure that you know, Runarsson's guaranteed to play the cup games, the Europa League games, for example.
No.
I mean, I don't know, but it wouldn't surprise me if when the Europa League rolls around, Bernd Leno's playing those games, and I've got absolutely no problem with that if that is the case.
Mm. What about the rest of the team selection? We had Granit Xhaka captaining the side. There's a thing. When you consider what happened basically
nearly
a year ago.
Yeah. I mean, I think that the selection was particularly strong in the middle of the park. I mean, you know, it was Xhaka and Ceballos, wasn't it? Which I think A, tells you that, you know, Arteta probably wanted to put out a competitive side in this game, but B, tells you he's pretty short of options. I mean, you know, if you're not going to select Lucas Torreira, who seems to be headed out, or Matteo Guendouzi for different reasons, you've basically got Xhaka, Ceballos and Elneny as your central midfield options. I mean, you've got Joe Willock, who can play there, but he seems more comfortable in advanced areas at times. You've got Maitland-Niles, who you don't seem to want to play there.
Well, I mean, can we put that to bed? Can we put the idea of Ainsley Maitland-Niles as a central midfielder to bed? Because it's one of those things that goes around, and I don't really understand why, because he's, what has he played there for us? Twice? Somewhere? You know, the entire time at Arsenal, you know, his career has been playing as a left-back or a wing-back or a right-back or a right-wing-back, occasionally in the front three, a couple of games last season under Unai Emery. But he's never been played as a central midfielder. Maybe he's somebody who could do a job there, but I don't know that he's someone we should be talking about as an option, because, you know, sort of like talking about David Luiz as an option for central midfield when, you know, he's not, even though he, you know, has played there.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I'd say to that is that, funnily enough, in this kind of left wing back role, he kind of ends up operating in that space more than he ever has, you know. He kind of becomes the auxiliary central midfielder. And it was Bukayo Saka who was doing that job ostensibly yesterday. But I thought it was interesting, he played it a lot more narrow, right? He felt like he was more part of the midfield yesterday.
Right. Well, yeah, I was looking at the formation when the game started, and it looked very much like a back four. It looked more like a back four than the back three, particularly when you looked at where Saka was taking up positions early on. He was very, very central, wasn't he?
He does quite advanced often.
Yeah, and he doesn't, I don't mean Saka here, I mean Arteta, he doesn't really expand on kind of what he's thinking in terms of formation when he's asked about it a bit.
Did you see his press conference yesterday?
I didn't see the press conference, no. So I've read it, but you can give me your thoughts on this.
So yeah, James Penge of Football.London asked him a great question, you know, what formation were you playing tonight? Which, you know, I think probably needs to be asked to Mikel more often, because it is a fascinating question. And he completely batted it away, Arteta. He kind of laughed and said, well, you know, we make little changes game by game to the system to see, you know, how we can, you know, make ourselves stronger against an opponent. But he basically wouldn't answer it. And I think that's because he knows he's got a relatively good thing going with this kind of system that he makes little, kind of gets under the hub of it, makes little tweaks to. And the biggest tweaks often, I think, come around that kind of left wing back position, which either, you know, can be a third central midfield player or can be more of a left back or can operate, you know, overlapping. There's all sorts of things he can get to do. And I agree with you that more than ever yesterday, or more than for some time, it felt like we were playing with a back four shape and Saka as part of that midfield three.
Yeah.
And he said specifically, Arteta, you know, we worked on some stuff based on Monday night. You know, they saw things on Monday that they were able to exploit, and it was quite effective. I mean, interesting as well that he put Pepe on that flank, you know.
Yes. Yeah, I thought that was interesting. You know, what did you make of his performance? Because I looked at him and was looking at a player who, I don't know, he feels like a player who's short of confidence. And it's kind of easy to understand why that might be the case, because he's not playing as regularly as he did last season. He finished the season strongly, but has lost his place. And we had this discussion on Monday, so I don't want to go over old ground again in terms of everything else. But you look at a game like this and think, okay, do something, you know, create something, score something. There were a couple of moments, I think, where he looked okay. But in general, I you know, like most of the Arsenal team, I suppose, he didn't really do anything that particularly eye-catching. I think Leno was by far and away our best player. There was nobody outfield who particularly stood out. I don't think we might come to Gabriel now in a second, who I thought was good as well. But in general, nobody really stood out as an outfield player.
Yeah, I mean, I thought Pepe, he looked dangerous in moments, but I think thus far he has been a player kind of moments at Arsenal. I think we have to give him a bit of a break because I don't think this is the role where he's most comfortable. But I think it should be a role that's an option for him. And I think that the way Arsenal is structured, that left-sided attacker, you know, is the one that has more freedom generally and greater opportunity to get in behind. I mean, he was involved in our early chance, which I think we probably could have taken the lead from, which came to Eddie Nketiah in the end. That was actually a pretty decent move.
Yeah, it was a good move. Good pass from Willock to Nketiah. And, you know, he didn't make the most of that. He should have hit that first time, I think.
He did really well, Joe Willock, actually, because it was kind of under his feet a bit and he was travelling at speed. And I thought that was a good piece of play to find Nketiah at the front post.
Yeah, it was good. But like you say, at Anfield, and we said this before, you get few chances, you've got to do better with the chances that you take. But again, one of the things that struck me about the way that we played, you know, we have to acknowledge that Liverpool were on top. They were better than us. They had more shots than us, more chances than us. The fact that Leno was man of the match and he made all those saves tells you, the story. You know, you don't need to go into the nuts and bolts of that. But we did see an Arsenal team that was trying to play in a specific way, even under pressure. There were moments, you know, I've lost count of the amount of times we worked it out from the back and we did that thing where the ball came to Xhaka with his back to the midfield and he just played it out to the left-hand side, either to Saka or to Kolasinac. Yeah. You know, that is a very, very structured, deliberate pattern. He's not even looking. He doesn't need to look because he knows where his teammate is supposed to be. So that is an interesting aspect to the way that we played, even if we didn't really cause Liverpool too many problems.
Yeah, I mean, we had the old kind of shots issue that we had, you know, on Monday night as well. We were conceding a lot more attempts on goal than we made. But I did think, and granted, this wasn't full strength Liverpool or anything like it, and it enabled us to have a bit more possession and a bigger foothold in the game. But I agree with you that defensively, you know, given that it was quite a heavily rotated team, we looked pretty solid, and I thought Gabriel was a really positive part of that.
Yeah, I agree. I thought, you know, the minutes will have done him good. He looks a bit more comfortable, a bit more assured on the ball and within the system that we're using. You know, he's playing with Kolasinac outside him, who had a couple of moments last night which were a bit iffy, it's fair to say. And again, I suppose helped a little bit by the fact that he's got in Ceballos and Xhaka, two players out of him who are willing to take the ball. I did notice him try and play the long pass a few times as well.
Right, yeah. I mean, it was on because Liverpool defend increasingly high, don't they? So there's often space in behind. It is interesting. I do think he, you know, that central role in a, well, like we say, it was more of a four at times yesterday, but I basically feel that he and Luiz do seem to be competing for the same place at the moment. I mean, Rob Holding plays all the games, right? He's played all six games this season now. Quite incredible for a player who seems to be headed out the door. Probably the William Saliba situation has something to do with that, but I'm sure we'll get to that in the questions.
Yeah, we'll touch on Saliba in the questions. I mean, what else is there to say about this game?
A succession of quite good Bern Leno saves, really, wasn't it? I mean, the one from Van Dijk I thought was particularly good, that was very low down.
Yep.
And then there was the one where, I forget who had the attempt, I think it was Gruitch, the midfield with a header, where Leno almost seemed to dive early and the ball almost looped over him, but he managed to get a hand up to it. That was actually a pretty decent save in the end.
I think Paul Merson called it a worldie. I mean, it was a very good save, and he did make good saves throughout. And it has been a feature of his tenure that you know, he's been a very busy goalkeeper, and I think he's at his best when he is a busy goalkeeper. So as long as we have these issues defensively and allowing as many shots as we do, he's gonna be important and also look good, hopefully, because he can make saves. So penalty shootout.
Yes,
the old penalties are a lottery. It's a lottery. It's a lottery. You've got no control over penalties whatsoever. You know, there's just no way that you can do anything about the result of a penalty shootout. You can't show
in the lap of the gods.
Yeah, you can't show your character or your technique or your nerve, hold your mettle, and do it under pressure. I think what's quite interesting is penalty shootouts without fans.
Yeah,
it must be
more,
a factor.
More goals are scored.
Is that true?
It feels like it doesn't
does,
it?
Doesn't mean, it?
Didn't Milan have a penalty shootout last night that went to 24 takers or something? Yeah, 20.
Really?
No, there were 20. Yeah, AC Milan threw out a remarkable 24 penalty shootout. And there was one recently where keepers took. I think it might have been in this competition in the Carabao. I feel like, having watched, you know, Arsenal in a few shootouts down the years, we're seeing penalties scored more. And it'd be interesting to look into, but it does feel that way. And it makes perfect sense, doesn't it? I mean, you know, everybody knows that players practice penalties. They're very technically capable of scoring them. It's the psychological factors that impede upon that.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, we're seeing that worn out, but very good penalties from Arsenal for the most part.
Yeah,
yesterday. I'm just trying to go through the takers. So first up, it was Lacazette.
Good penalty.
Who I was nervous about, to be honest, based on it was that goal at the other end, at the same end, that he missed the chance. But yeah, very good penalty.
Yeah.
Then Cedric Suarez.
Good penalty. Like
good
keeper,
penalty.
Keeper. I mean, I tell you what's a sign of a good penalty for me is if the keeper goes the right way and he still has no chance of getting near it.
Yeah.
I wasn't, you know, I wouldn't say I'm the biggest Cedric fan in the world, but that was a really good penalty because Adrian went the right way at full stretch and he was still miles from the ball. So that's, you know, that tells you how well he placed that.
Yeah. I thought he was, you know, competent on the night. Absolutely fine. Elneny, not a great penalty.
No, one of those which is easy for the goalkeeper, you know, hit at the right height, nowhere near the corner or wherever. So, yeah, poor
but
one.
But then. The great, the phenomenal Ainsley Maitland-Niles.
I've been working on this. Going to do it for you now, okay? This is my impression of Ainsley Maitland-Niles taking a penalty. You ready?
Yeah.
Scored.
That's exactly it. You've captured the tone of it perfectly.
Thank you. I'm very proud of that one. I mean, what a dude.
Incredible. He couldn't help but laugh. And neither could I on my sofa. I was laughing at the audacity of it.
The camera on him as he was coming up, I would love to see, like, you know, one of those where they do a documentary on someone like Zidane and they have these, like, pitched level cameras and it's shot in grainy 35 millimeter film and you can see all the off the ball work that a player does or a tackle flying in or whatever it is and it looks all gritty and realistic. I want to see that footage of Ainsley Maitland-Niles sauntering up to take the penalty, singing away to himself. He was going to walk along and go boop, 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 and then just the run up, the execution, it looks so casual, but it's just clinical in the end. It's unbelievably enjoyable to watch this guy take penalties, you know, particularly at a time when in football we are analysing the ever-loving shite out of every single thing, good, bad, or indifferent. To have this one thing that is just like, it's just amazing. Even the Mug Smasher was texting me going, Jesus, that guy, he's got some skills.
It's incredible. It's because he has, he seems to have no pulse, basically. The guy is so ice cool. And, you know, I think it leads to his body language being misinterpreted sometimes. And I think Arteta had his own, you know, issues and concerns about that. But in a penalty shootout, that's exactly what you want. The quote actually from Arteta was brilliant, where he was like, I nearly had a heart attack watching him go up to take it. But, you know.
Well, and then what did he say? He said, Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ.
But, you know, it's an immaculate penalty. I'd make him our penalty taker all the time. I just want to see that as many times as possible, to be honest.
Oh, me too. Me too. It is unbelievable. I love it. I love everything about it. So,
Yeah, and then, of course, Leno saved a couple, didn't he? Saved from Divock Origi and Harry Wilson. And it put, and then Joe Willock with, to be honest, another quite bizarre run-up, wouldn't you say?
I would, yeah. It was a bit strange. He sort of did like a semicircle and then, you know.
It looked like he was going to take it left-footed.
That's what I was going, come on, Joe, you're not Santi Cazorla, relax.
Or like a Rabona penalty or something. and yeah, I mean, not. I think he rightfully looked a little bit embarrassed by the way it went over the line. But listen, I like the confidence of Granit Xhaka, who seemed to be already celebrating when the ball went in.
That was funny, wasn't it? Because everyone else was just standing there and Xhaka was on his way from the the line of players in the centre circle. Look, here's the thing, right? Elneny took a bad penalty and Adrian saved it. Wilson and Origi took bad penalties or poor penalties and Leno saved them. Willock took a pretty poor penalty, but Adrian failed to make the save. So, you know, let's give credit where it's due to our goalkeeper. It's easy to say sometimes that penalties are missed rather than goalkeepers save them. And I think they were more misses then saves all of them, but you know, you still have to get down there and you still have to keep the ball out of the net. And Adrian got a touch, but not enough. So tough titty.
Absolutely.
I mean, they really enjoyed it as well, didn't they? They really
footballers like winning. They love it.
I know. But I what did you make of what Mikel Arteta said afterwards? Something along the lines of this is a big step forward, and we've a lot of things to learn from an exceptional team like Liverpool, but we're on the right path. I mean, as much as we say it's only Carabao Cup, we kind of got away with it. We're a little bit lucky. We had to rely on our goalkeeper. The players are just like, well, we've beaten Liverpool for the third time in the last four meetings.
Yeah.
You know, even if you can, as a player, acknowledge, and you probably have to, acknowledge the fact that there is a difference in quality, just the simple fact of winning the games gives you confidence, right?
Look, 3 out of 4 against the champions isn't bad. And granted, a couple were on penalties, but we're showing that we can hang with them, you know, on a relatively consistent basis, which feels like progress, especially. You know, this game was at Anfield. I mean, I went into this thinking the score could be anything, really, in either direction. And but, you know, if we'd been beaten 3-0 last night, I probably would have shrugged my shoulders and gone, oh, well, it's the Carabao. But we come away with a really positive result, and it'll improve the confidence of the team. It'll improve their belief in the manager.
Yeah.
It's, you know, when you win these games, it's great. And I do think, you know, I always remember the first trophy that Guardiola won when he came into Man City was this competition, the League Cup. And I know Arteta's already got the FA Cup under his belt, but being in the quarterfinals now, I think he'll have an eye on that final. I think he'll think, you know, what would it do for the resurgence of Arsenal if I could add another piece of silverware in February? You know, I think that will be on the agenda.
Exactly. Get our Europa League place absolutely sorted out by February. Take the pressure off, and then it helps us, you know, get into the Champions League. Simple as that. That's how we do it.
Yeah, exactly.
That's how we do it. Okay, well, look, we are going to take a little break here. We're going to come back with your questions and more in part two. We've also got the winners of our competition from last week's Arsecast T-shirt competition, so stay tuned for that. It's coming up right after this.
Hey, Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort with, thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Welcome back to the Arscast Extra. This is part two of the show where I don't fuck up the intro, and in which we ask you to give us questions on Twitter at Gunnerblog and at Arsblog on the Arsblog Facebook page, facebook.com/thearsblog, even though I forgot to do it again. Sorry about that. And on the Arsblog Discord chat server, which you get access to if you are an Arsblog member on Patreon. Before we get into questions, on last week's Arscast, I asked you a question to win a t-shirt from 44t.com, an Arsenal t-shirt of your choice. The question was, it was something to do with 29 years ago we signed somebody who went on to become the club's leading goal scorer. James, sure you got the answer?
29 years ago. I'm struggling actually doing that maths. Ian Wright.
There you go, Ian Wright. A surprising number of people plumped for Thierry Henry. So there you go. But unfortunately, you guys are all wrong. Lots of you got Ian Wright right. And the winners of the t-shirts are Declan Malone and Eugene Ridson. Well done to you guys. I'll be on to you to get your details. We'll get the prizes sent out to you. For the rest of you, if you want to buy the t-shirts, you can get a discount at 44t.com. 10% off by using the code ARSBLOG at checkout. That's 44t.com. T-double-E as in t-shirt. So there you go. 44t.com. Thank you to those guys for the prizes. And we'll have more competitions on the podcast soon. Right. Time to get into the questions, and a big one, James. We're starting with William Saliba. It's a big talking point. Lewis Ambrose says, Saliba could turn out to be a top-class centre-half eventually, and we'll all be happy. But right now, given our financial situation and lack of other deals, how do you feel about the prospect that we spent £27 million on him only to not use him for at least 2 years? And this comes in the wake of stories that potentially we might be looking to loan him back to France.
Yes, I think it seems that Arsenal are open to that possibility, which is a surprise. You know, I think given the manner in which he arrived and some of the hype about him. And I have to say, I watched Saliba play several times last season, once in person in the flesh, and basically watched him and only him for 90 minutes against Monaco. I thought he looked really, really good. And I thought he looked like a player who could come in and certainly push for a first team place at Arsenal this season. So I don't have an anxiety of like, this guy's crap. Do you know what I mean? I don't feel like there's nothing there, because I've seen it. What I do think is it's pretty clear that they feel he's not ready and that his development hasn't been what it might have been over the past 6 months or a year. And I think when you look at the situation and you look at, A, the fact that he's had a couple of quite big injuries, B, obviously it's been the pandemic and the cessation of the French league, he didn't get through a full season there for multiple reasons. And, you know, as Arteta alluded to yesterday, there is a personal element to this. You know, I think David Ornstein reported earlier this summer he'd suffered personal trauma, lost someone very close to him. And maybe all these things kind of combine just to sort of create a situation that maybe they feel they don't want to rush him. I mean,
yeah,
it's a little bit frustrating given the amount of money that we've paid for him. But if he comes back in 12 months and, you know, eventually we get the player we hope he is, then all will be forgiven, you know? What do you think?
Were you surprised that he wasn't involved last night?
I was surprised he wasn't involved in the 18, I have to say.
Right.
I thought he would travel with the squad even for that experience, you know?
I can't say that I was particularly surprised. I think if you look back at what Mikel Arteta has said about William Saliba since he was first asked about him.
Yeah, it's been pretty consistent.
It's the message has basically been, calm your tits here, please. Because this guy potentially is a very good player, but we have to be cautious with him. We have to make sure that he's integrated properly. You know, he's basically done everything he can to play down the hype and the expectation that comes with a £28 million price tag. And that's not something that Saliba has any control over. But, of course, it informs what people expect from him and what they think about him. But Arteta's message all the time is like, this is a guy for the future. He's a guy for the future. Let's not put too much on him now, etc., etc. So I think Arteta's been really consistent in what he's said about Saliba. So I wasn't that surprised when he wasn't involved. I think now we have to look at him for what he is and who he is and not how much he cost. Because I think you're right. They must view him as not ready. If they thought he was ready for Carabao Cup, they would play him or they would include him in the squad. I think perhaps the fact that we've drawn Leicester and Liverpool in the Carabao Cup as opposed to, you know, a lower league team or somebody like that has had a little bit of an impact here as well. You might be worried about, you know, if a player is that good, if he does have that amount of potential, is Arsenal not the best place for him to realise it, you know? I would have a little bit of a concern about that. And I think...
What do you mean by that?
I mean that you can justify a loan and say this is the right thing for him right now at his development. And I've said this before. He's 19 years of age and a central defender. There are very, very few 19-year-old central defenders playing at the top level in England. Almost none. Very few of them around the world playing at the sort of level that Arsenal aspire to be anyway. So I think we have to be really realistic about that. But what I mean maybe is that, you know, if he is the kind of superstar, potential superstar that he was touted to be when we paid a fucking load of money for him.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that his development can only come elsewhere is just a little bit of a nagging doubt in the back of my mind. And I'm not saying he won't make it. And I'm not saying he can't be a good player for us in the future. And I can see all the logic in giving him regular game time where he can play and he can develop and he can learn the game and he can grow and mature physically. Because even though he's a big guy, you know, at 19, you're still coming together, if you like. So I can see all that. But it just is a little bit of a doubt in the back of my mind. I wonder as well, maybe, you know, about the deal and whether whether the deal was a good deal for Arsenal to do based on the financial situation at the club. What could you have done with 30 million quid in terms of midfield or maybe even a defender who was potentially, you know, Premier League ready? So
yeah, I mean, the reason you spend 30 million quid on a player that you're not going to get for a year is because you think they're going to be worth more. Do you know what I mean? Down the line. And and if you were buying Saliba this summer after the season he had at St. Etienne, I'm not sure he'd cost more. If he goes out on loan to Rennes or wherever else it is, you know, I'd be surprised he comes back a £40 million player. So, you know, it's a really long wait for that investment to come good.
Yeah, exactly. And I would say, again, to make it very clear, I hope that he can become the player that we want him to be. If sending him on loan is how we get him to the level where we need him to be, I'm okay with that. You know, if this is managing his future and managing his present correctly to get Arsenal a really good player, I'm absolutely okay with it. I think it could be the right thing for him. It could be the right thing for us. I cannot help but have serious questions, though, about the deal, about the outlay on him until such time as we see him playing for us on a regular basis. I don't think that's unreasonable. Again, I'm not saying that it has anything to do with him.
I'm questioning
the people who made that deal over a year and a half ago now, where he barely played for Saint-Étienne, and we're paying £28 million for an 18-year-old. We get excited about that because very often people view price tag as commensurate with talent or a player's readiness. That's clearly not the case. If down the line £28 million looks an absolute bargain for William Saliba, I'll take my hat off. I'll eat all the humble pie you want. For now, though, it's difficult to argue that it was a good deal.
Because, you know, we are a club who are operating under certain financial considerations, you know, restrictions. And you know, like you say, we could potentially have used that money on a player who would have improved the first team in the short term. So I completely agree with you on that front. I really am optimistic that Saliba will come good in time, but whether it's kind of soon enough to make that a sensible purchase.
Yeah, that's
is
exactly
another question.
That is exactly it. Yeah.
Okay, so let's have another question. Oh, this was an interesting one. Yes, Ollie Tucker said, if we are to assume or hope that Arsenal are being run smarter these days, they'll surely have backup options to Aouar and Partey, but we've barely heard anything about other possible deals.
Mm.
Are you worried we haven't heard about potential alternative options?
Yeah, a little bit. There was a good question on the Discord from Marty who said, are there any other midfielders in world football other than Aouar and Partey? which, you know,
not according to my Twitter mentions. Well, I don't think so.
I think the only other player that we've heard about in terms of backup is Jorginho.
Can I say, that feels like an Arsenal signing to me.
I know, me too.
Do you know what I mean?
It's got a real whack of, oh God, I don't want this to happen, so it's going to happen.
I don't think he's a bad player.
No, I don't either. But I mean, if you're looking for... What are you looking for?
He's not Thomas Partey.
And he's not
Aouar. He's kind of, you know, he does the Shaka Ceballos job, you know, of kind of keeping it moving. And
yeah, I mean, he is good. He's a good footballer. There's no question about that. And it's just, it would be
be
underwhelming, wouldn't it?
It would be a bit underwhelming. He's also 28, which is, you know, an age where it's like, oh, we're not getting any return on that, probably.
Here we go again.
You know, it feels a bit David Luiz-y. I think it's basically the reason that it feels not great as a prospect. And I think he is on the list. I think he is an option. Is that, you know, it's a cast-off, isn't it? It feels like a cast-off from a competitor. And they never feel great.
Another one.
Yeah. But the only thing I would offer in mitigation, as you know, I've got some ties to Chelsea through my brother. He rates Jorginho very highly. I mean, there was a lot of crap last season about, like, he's made a million passes and made no assists. I don't know if you remember that. But like, but that's not really his game. You know, he is someone who's a really good possession player and also someone who, you know, Guardiola and Man City really, really wanted. And didn't get. So it wouldn't surprise me if Arteta is a bit of a fan. Nevertheless, you know, if you offered me Thomas Partey, everyone for me, Jose Mar, you know, they are more exciting signings, certainly.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, is he kind of like a polished Xhaka in a way, a bit more mobile?
Yeah, probably less physical than Xhaka, but...
Slash clumsy.
Yeah, but probably a broader range of passing, an ability to move the ball at more speed, basically. You know, he's super technically gifted. Takes a lovely penalty as well.
Mm.
But not a player who will... not a player who will sort of do a different job, I think, to anyone that we've necessarily got. Like he could be maybe an upgrade on what we've got. He's certainly a better player than Elneny in that position.
Yeah.
But he's not the link between the midfield and the attack, you know, that we're looking for. And he's not someone who is going to beat people on the dribble.
Mm.
So maybe a bit more of the same if he arrives.
Yeah, so to sum it up, yes, I am a bit worried that we haven't heard I haven't heard more about potential midfield replacements if the players that we want aren't coming in. And of course we are heading into the final days of the transfer window. We've said this all along that it is going to go down to the wire with a lot of these deals, that a lot of stuff is going to come together. Let's talk about Awa and Partey a little bit, or certainly Awa, who it felt like it was really close this week, and I was told by somebody very reliable that it's kind of all but done. But of course, until it goes through, there are potential snags and hitches and perhaps interest from other clubs. You know, it's always interesting when you're after a Lyon player, and as it gets closer and closer, the entire world seems to want to make bids for this particular player. I don't know what that could be. But what's your thoughts on his potential arrival? Didn't the guy at Lyon say everything has to be done by today or nobody's going?
Yeah, and shout out to Constant Strider on Twitter, who basically asked us what our predictions are for the final few days of the window. I mean, the difficulty with this deal is that it's Lyon and that it's Olas. And, you know, Edu, Arteta, Hasfami, they do want this player, but they have never negotiated really, particularly Edu, with this guy before. And he is tricky and it is difficult. And, you know, the goalpost can move late in the day. I think Lyon's need for cash has been slightly overplayed. Like they need it kind of by next summer, not necessarily by now.
That's fine. We'll pay them then. It's great.
Well, that's reportedly what PSG are offering to do. I don't know if you've seen those reports coming out of L'Equipe last night. The story is that PSG would like to sign Aouar in a year's time. And basically pay for him then, because it would help them get around FFP regulations. Clearly, this guy is now the number one target, but we are really close now. So it's just very difficult to say whether we'll get this over the line. I mean, I said on Monday, I think, that I was really optimistic about it. And I do still have that optimism, just because when I hear the noises out of Lyon, it doesn't feel an insurmountable gap. It feels like Arsenal are sort of in the 40 million euro bracket and Lyon want it to be in the 50 million euro bracket. And for all the financial problems that are besetting the club at the moment, 10 million euros, it feels like something we might be able to find.
It's still quite a lot of money. You know, we get this weird thing with transfers where enormous amounts of money are deemed sort of slightly insignificant. You know,
it'd be a lot of money to me.
It's only 10 million. It's only 10, you know, and I know what you're saying. And it's like, if you need the player, if you want the player, push the boat out, get the money, get it in, get it done. I know all that, but we do have to remember that those are fairly big chunks of money all the same. I remain confident about our... Whether we do Partey as well, I don't know. I think it really depends on what else we do, and whether we can sell some players that we don't want anymore. But as we've said, it's proving very difficult, isn't it, to find buyers?
Yeah, I mean, what did you make of the news? And a few people asked about this, you know, of Lucas Torreira seemingly joining Atletico on loan. Do you find that frustrating? I think it's the reality of the market, unfortunately. I just think it's so hard, especially in Europe, to find people with 30 million euros.
Well, I think that's the thing in Europe. Sheffield United are buying Rhian Brewster from Liverpool for a fee, reportedly 23 million
pounds. Yeah.
What the how do Liverpool keep doing this? What fucking magic do they possess that they can sell these? They've got a head of sales.
We need to steal their head of sales.
Oh my God. They do it all the time. This is here. Look at this promising youngster. He has never played a game for us. He has never scored a goal. He has never made
He will
an
never
assist.
Score again if it's Dominic Solanke.
He has got one leg. He's blind in one eye and he keeps falling over. Oh, how much? 40 million? Mm. Brilliant. I don't know how the fuck they do it. It's incredible. It's incredible.
It
so that's the market. That is the market, you know. But that's maybe a Premier League market. I think we...
So we should be trying to sell Torreira to Burnley or something. Or,
exactly.
You know, and can we sell Guendouzi to Aston Villa for 40 million quid?
Well, they just bought in Ross Barkley. I think that ship has sailed, unfortunately. But I mean, look, it is frustrating, isn't it, when some clubs seem to be able to do the kind of business that they do, and we struggle. But Torreira to Atletico on loan. Look, ideally you'd want to sell. But if there is no sale and there's nobody willing to pay for him, even though there were some Italian clubs apparently willing to do that, I would say this. It depends on how much the loan fee is.
Yeah.
And loan fees can be not insubstantial. I know that when we were looking for Perisic on loan for 6 months, there was talk of, you know, having to pay somewhere in the region of £5 to £6 million for that, you know? So it's possible that you could still send someone on loan and bring in an okay amount of money or some money that will boost the coffers that might help you get something done. And maybe next year the market is in a better place, or he's great for Atletico and they really want to buy him, or whatever it might be. So it's not ideal, but then I think most of the business that we're going to do between now and Monday night, I think it's going to be loans for the most part.
Yeah. And the other thing to say about loans, I mean, look, of course, I'd rather Arsenal could get big transfer fees for these players. But, you know, Torreira's salary, what's that going to be per year? 3 or 4 million it could be. Do you know what I mean? And that does go back into the pot potentially. And that makes a difference. I mean, what are your predictions? Who do you feel like we're going to shift a few out? It's been so difficult, and I think we maybe the Brewster thing, sure, but it does feel like the Premier League is kind of a rule unto itself a little bit financially at the moment.
Yeah, it's so difficult to predict. I mean, you look at Kolasinac last night, put in the kind of performance that pretty much assured his Arsenal future.
I think genuinely, you know, from what I understand, finding someone who can cover his salary is really difficult.
And he wants to stay.
Yeah, he's happy. So
he's happy enough to stay. I think you're going to look at Torreira going for sure. I think Guendouzi will still go somewhere because clearly that situation is not getting any better. If there was a chance of rehabilitation or a chance of repairing what's gone wrong, he would have been involved in a game like last night, even on the bench, you know. It suggests we want to move him on.
Do you think that will change after the deadline? Do you think these players who've been a bit frozen out after the deadline, Arteta will go, okay, you're here till January now? Or do you think he'll hold firm?
Don't know. I mean,
might depend who he can get in. Because he might end up needing people.
Well, that is the thing. He might have to be pragmatic, or he might be forced into playing some players that he wouldn't want to play normally. But what's clear is he does not want to play Guendouzi. Doesn't want to give him any game time for whatever reason. So if he doesn't have to play him, I don't think he will. Which means you've got a player sitting around training, doing fuck all, which is not ideal, which is why I think he will go. We had a question here. Let me see if I can find it. And this sort of ties in a little bit to our transfer stuff. Boom, 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 boom. It comes from...
Yes.
B-Excited, who's at Eroyas AFC, who says, what did you make of Reed Nelson? He says, but that's autocorrect. Damn you, autocorrect. Reese Nelson not getting minutes at all. Do you guys think he's off on a loan or a sale? Because surely he was a better option to play from the right than Joe Willock.
I think he's off on a loan. I do. I mean, we know he's available. It was strange that he didn't get any game time at all, I thought, a little bit. I mean, we went for more experienced players from the bench for the most part. But, yeah, I think he's off on a loan. And when you actually look at the composition of our squad, I think that is, you know, a risk that we can afford to take. We have players for both flanks, you know, who can cover there. And I think it's what he needs. Is that what you think as well?
It would be a rational explanation as to why he wasn't in the team ahead of Joe Willock, who isn't really a right-sided attacker. No. You know, he can play in those advanced roles, and he does like to get in the box, but it's usually from a more central position. So I do think that the fact that he wasn't involved is a way of, you know, ensuring that you know, he doesn't pick up an injury or something like that. Kolasinac,
you know,
played, in fairness, and he's been linked away, so maybe maybe that's a sign that he's not going anywhere.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, the other thing on Reece Nelson is, you know, there is also Emil Smith Rowe to consider, who is back in full training now and will either, I guess, you know, take up one of those attacking spots in the squad or could be someone who gets loaned out themselves. So, yeah, there's so much, I mean, to happen. And to be honest, when it gets this late in the window and it's as relatively quiet, like, it doesn't feel like there are five deals about to happen. You know what I mean?
No.
It would take a pretty dramatic final few days for Arsenal to do all the business they'd like to do.
Particularly when you consider that we're going from a Carabao Cup game on Thursday to a league game against Sheffield United on Sunday.
Yeah.
You know, I know a lot of stuff can go on in the background. I know a lot of stuff can get done at the last minute, but it really does feel like this is going to be the biggest last minute transfer window from Arsenal. Maybe since the one in which Arteta himself arrived.
Yeah, since 2011. It really could be.
Different circumstances, obviously, but...
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's been a fascinating... a kind of as a social... Particularly on social media, the reaction to the transfer window this summer, I think, has been really interesting. I don't know if you've noticed it, but it feels like the kind of fervour around transfers is greater than ever. And so I'm expecting Monday to be a pretty crazy day.
Yeah, we are going to do, as ever, our transfer deadline day live blog over on Arseblog News. So we'll be putting in a hefty, lengthy shift because I think it's a late night deadline, isn't it?
Oh, I actually don't know. Sorry about that. Transfer deadline, let's have a look. October 5th, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes, 11 p.m.
Oh,
wow.
For fuck's sake, 11 p.m. Get Andrew Allen to do the late shift. Yeah, look, it does feel like a lot could happen on that day. And there are other potential loan moves as well. And I wouldn't 100% rule out loan signings either.
No.
You know, I think if we push the boat out and we get Aua, for example, and we spend the money on him, I'm not sure there's much wiggle room to do anything else unless we get a massive bid for a player and we rake in some cash and we can sort of square it off against a potential incoming deal. So
Well, let's hope the buyers come out of the woodwork. You know, we need that to happen, but
yeah
it's gonna be interesting. And the other thing to say is that, like, you know, Arteta, I think, actually, I don't know what I'm saying here, Andrew. Cut that bit.
No, I refuse to cut it. That's fine. No, it's absolutely fine. It's okay to lose your train of thought, James. People need to realise that we are just human too.
We are human too, yeah.
We are just two...
Sometimes.
Two guys.
We just don't know what we're saying.
Exactly. Exactly. I think that could be part of the charm. I don't know, but let's see. Have you got any left? Have you got one left? Or?
Yeah, I did actually. We're looking forward to the weekend. Let's have a look at this. Mark Nellis on the Discord says, has Gabriel done enough to be ahead of Luiz for the Sheffield United match? His long passing seems to be just as effective. He's a bit quicker, so he can make up for holding sluggishness. He even looked good playing with Kolasinac.
It's a good question. I don't know that his long passing is quite the same as David Luiz, who is really good at that. You know, that's a real strength in his game. Has he done enough? Look, I'm ready for the future. I'm ready to see a new, improved, youthful-looking Arsenal defence with Gabriel and Tierney. We did have a question as well from somebody who said... see, this is how well prepared we are. Gaz Edwards at GazEd87 said, heard you say Luiz and Gabriel can't play in the same team. Wouldn't it be good to see Gabriel play left centre back with Luiz in the middle and Tierney at left wing back? So we have options.
It is an option, yeah. I think, you know, it'd be asking a lot of Gabriel to play it like Tierney plays it. That's all I would say.
Yeah.
But yeah, it'd be intriguing. I mean, you know, if you're thinking, how do I get my best defenders on the pitch? You know, that is a way. The other prospect is, I know Luiz prefers the left side, but could you play Gabriel and Luiz in something more like a four? That's also a possibility. So we shall see. I think he is the future. So at some point in the course of this season, he will be getting the nod and the seniority because... You know, the chances are David Luiz won't be here in 12 months' time.
Very true. Andrew McClure on the Discord says, morning, guys, what would your ideal Europa League group be? I don't even know who we can draw.
No.
It's taking...
My ideal is trips that aren't very far for the team's sake. You know, so just, you know, local. Keep it local.
Belgium, Holland and Scotland or something like that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Isle of Wight. Is there a team in the Europa League from the Isle of Wight? Isle of Man Rovers. You could play them.
But I suppose I'm not bothered about, like, you know, it is the Europa League group stage. There's going to be some crap teams in it. I'm not, like, looking for a glamour tie at this point in the competition. I want the teams where we can rotate heavily, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, me too. Me too. I think that's an important part of keeping the squad happy and developing some of our young players. Right, we have to go. There's a lot going on today. You've got to go. I've got to go. But I want to say thank you to everybody, as always, for listening. Thank you for being here. We will have an Arsecast Extra on Monday, hopefully discussing our win over Sheffield United in the Premier League on Sunday. All change again, I guess, or a lot of change again in terms of the team there, yeah?
Yeah, I would think so. Plenty of changes. Maybe not in central midfield. I don't know, but I wonder if Shaka and Sabas might play again.
You never know. Okay, we'll see what happens on Sunday. We'll be here on Monday, of course, and we're going to have something for Patreon members on Tuesday, a sort of discussion about the transfer window, what we've got, what we have, what we hold, the state of the squad. We'll do that on Tuesday for Patreon members as well. So until then, folks, have yourselves a great weekend. Until the next one.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.